Okay, I think we're up on time, so let's get started. I'd like to welcome everybody to our Twitter space today with Kevin Brady, the CEO of A2X. I'd like to welcome, I can see Ivan on here and Llewellyn. I see what? Ricky, one of my FinTwit mates, dialing in from the Northern Territory in Australia, staying up late. Thanks for joining us. I wanted to have a chat with Kevin primarily because of the trading delay that we had here in South Africa with the JSE 2 weeks ago, and really put the focus on A2X. And I thought it'd be good to get Kevin on here to kind of give us a bit more of a background for people who don't know, and where they sit in the market and why they exist. What's their raison d'être, or as Simon Sinek would say these days, what's their why? So maybe we'll start there, Kevin. Maybe you could just set the scene for us. Give us a bit of background about the A2X, where it started, how long it's been running, just to kind of give people a ground zero foundation on A2X.
Well, thanks, Mark, and thanks for inviting me to chat about A2X today. Gosh, where did it all start? So my background is in financial markets. The bulk of my career has been institutional stockbroking, with a big part of it being Investec, but I did spend a little bit of time on the buy side as well. And during that process, I met a guy called Ashley Mendelovitz. Now, Ashley was the founder of a tech company called Perisys, which was in about 2011 was bought out by an Australian company called Iress, and they provide front-end trading systems, fixed hubs, and that to the market. And so I had a lot of interaction with Ashley, and Ashley was always beating the drum. We need competition in this market. We need to do something about it. And I think the time became right. I left Investec, and we decided to launch A2X. We brought in a third partner, a guy called Sean Melnick, who is one of the co-founders of Peregrine and still actually the chairman of Peregrine. And we felt between the three of us, we probably had enough understanding around markets to get something going. And so the first step was to apply for a license. And so we put a small team together. Look, we'd done a lot of work before that around how they operate internationally, what was the best model, formed the model, and started putting a license application together. And that took a considerable amount of time. It took us about 6 months to put the application together, but really scary, it took about 2 years to get an approval. So yeah, that's probably a little bit of background in terms of how we landed up at kicking it off.
Okay, and I think if my memory serves me correct, you've been up and running officially and taking listings since, is it the back end of 2016, early 2017, somewhere around there?
Yeah, not bad. Close. It took us, yeah, so we were, I'm just trying to think now, it was towards the end of 2014 then we started the process. We received our license in April 2017, and it was quite weird. It had taken 2 years to get it approved and demonstrate we had all the systems, etc. And we were given 6 months to open our doors for business. And so we actually went live on October 2017, so close to 4 years ago. And it's been quite a journey, I must say. I think just to give a more background, so what we did in setting up an exchange, first thing we said, if we're going to compete, we need better technology than the incumbent, right? So we did a licensing deal with an outfit called Aquis, a UK-based exchange that launched in 2013. Very, very interesting story, actually. They are now, they captured about 6% of pan-European market share. And I say they only launched in 2013. Their founder was a guy that used to run Chi-X, and Chi-X was the first competitor against the London Stock Exchange. So we had a wonderful partner and alignment in terms of understanding what happened in the UK and Europe. and be able to draw on that experience to bring it to South Africa. So we said we need to have really good tech. We knew from all the research we had done that the best first competitors that had been successful had all started in what we refer to as the secondary market. So come and compete in the secondary market and then build out from there. And so that really was the basis of our model in terms of coming into South Africa. Unfortunately, in South Africa, regulation had shifted. So in 2012, and it came effective 2013, the Financial Market Act opened up to allow competition. And interestingly enough, it really was designed to bring into the net some OTC exchanges that were taking place. They hadn't really considered our type of a model, but it, as I say, it opened the door for competition. And so we obviously pushed our way through it and now are competing. What I would say, though, is that in most countries, regulation was designed in a way that actually facilitated competition. In South Africa, we're not there yet. So it's not really a level playing field as yet, and we can talk through more about that. But they opened the door enough to push through. Now we're pushing hard to make sure it becomes more of a level playing field. And one of the key things is that if we were a new exchange in Europe or Australia or many emerging markets, we would be able to make shares available for trade on A2X by the fact that they have a listing in that jurisdiction and they're in good standing with their primary exchange. We wouldn't need to go to a company and ask for their permission. In South Africa, we don't allow that, so we have to go to every single company and persuade them of the merits of having multiple exchanges and having a secondary listing and the benefits of it. And so that was quite a big hurdle for us. But as you said, we opened in October 2017. We opened with three listings. One was Peregrine, which we would have been disappointed given one of our co-founders was the chairman of Peregrine. The second one was African Rainbow Capital. Again, they are one of our strategic shareholders, so it would have been disappointing if we hadn't have got them. But really what was a big win for us is that Coronation Fund Managers, one of the leading institutional fund managers in South Africa, backed the concept of having competition and listed on us on what day one. And now, you know, almost 4 years later, we're sitting with 54 securities listed on our platform with a combined market cap of just short of 5 trillion, actually. And by market cap, that actually now makes us the second largest exchange in Africa. So when I say it's been a wonderful journey, it's been wonderful and exciting, and we're in a good place.
Kevin, perhaps I can... Sorry, Mark, I was going to say perhaps I can jump in there and ask a question. I mean, there's pretty much three certainties in life at the moment. So it's death, taxes, and JCT listing announcements on SENS. I mean, it's basically every single week I find myself writing about it. It's just the reality.
Touché, yeah.
I guess the tough question is, you know, you've bravely opened this kind of highly regulated business. It's tough to do. I imagine it was expensive and need a lot of investment in tech. Obviously, from the outside looking in, our capital market in this country, our public capital market seems to be shrinking, not growing. And I'm very curious to get your thoughts on how you think about that. You know, I imagine that's a business risk for you, but I suppose in some ways it's also an opportunity.
So, yes, good question. So the first thing I would say is actually, as a starting point, South Africa's capital markets are well developed, right? And if you look at the market cap versus GDP, I think we're upward of about 3 times, which puts us in a very well-established bracket. You know, we have deep saving pools. I think which is surprising, right? So we've got this well-developed capital market system, but they never really allowed competition. And I think, you know, like all monopolies, they're not really there. They don't land up servicing the end user, right? they land up servicing themselves. And there's no doubt that I think we haven't progressed as rapidly and been responsive, I don't believe, as we should have been. And I do see that as one of A2X's roles as a competitor exchange is help progress the South African capital markets through innovation, order types, you know, being more responsive to what's required. So one, we're well developed. I don't think we've done as much as we should have done as capital markets in South Africa. We have seen an awful lot of delistings. I think part of that is obviously macroeconomics and politics. I can't really blame the exchange totally for that. But I would say that part of it is the exchange's fault. I think, in fact, you know, I think the focus in South Africa has been so aggressively on regulation. When you get small and mid-cap companies, they start questioning whether the cost of a listing, of the time and effort and the regulatory requirements, is worth being listed. And so I think there's a lot of work that can be done around that, where we try and find a better balance between protecting investors but attracting and growing new companies, or providing, you know, the platform for that. Do we see that as an opportunity? We do, but at this point in time, we offer only secondary listings. And again, that's part of the business model. You need to get into the space where the liquidity is and where the trade happens to make money. Very difficult to start an exchange and list one company at a time. You need like a 20-year time horizon. So you need to get that secondary market right where the money is. Then you need to develop and grow into those new spaces like primary listings. So the way we've done it, we said as a first step, secondary listings of JSE stocks. Then we said secondary listings of exchange-traded products on the JSE. We, about 18 months ago, we got approval to do inward listings. So if you have a primary listing in an approved foreign jurisdiction, you can inward list directly onto A2X. You don't need to be on the JSE. That's an important one. About 79 companies in the JSE are inward listings, and six of the top biggest companies that we trade in South Africa are inward listing. Their primary listing is offshore. So we see that as quite a nice growth market. We're offering that. We're then going to move into inward listings of exchange-traded products, and then we're looking at possibly primary listings of structured products and ultimately companies. So we are moving into that space, but it's important we get every step right and grow appropriately.
And Kevin, part of it is the low liquidity in the small and mid-caps. I mean, you've touched on that, and that's part of why we're seeing these delistings, is because entrepreneurs are looking at this and going, well, I can sell to private equity on a 5 or 6 times multiple. Why go through the pain and agony of being listed? And then I have to, you know, in any event, trade on a multiple of maybe 8 if I'm lucky, and go through all this regulation. And in any event, when a founder lists, they can't exactly sell out of their own company because they crash the share price in the process, which is something that very few founders actually understand. I think a lot of people start companies and they think, great, we'll list one day and that's our exit. And that's not really how the world works ultimately. So addressing liquidity is a big part of it. So I'm just curious, do you have any LTEX listed companies that are then secondary listed with you? I mean, I'm assuming you have the ability to do that.
So yes, you're quite right. That is a very big challenge in South Africa. That institutional investors tend to, understandably, you're running a lot of money, you're going to put time and effort into stuff. Are you going to put time and effort into a company that's not going to move the needle? So I understand that. And the challenge is then, how do we bring more liquidity into small and mid-cap stocks? And I think a lot of that's got to do with the growth of the retail, the sector, and also the growth in terms of boutique asset managers. So people where looking at these companies makes a difference. They can put it into their portfolio. It's worth the time and effort. So yes, South Africa needs to get that right. And as I say, a lot of it's about education and broadening, as I say, particularly in the retail sector. Do we have them listed? What we say to companies, if you have a listing on the JSE, you should have a secondary listing on us. So yes, we have companies, I mean, as small as Ascendus, which is only about a 200 million market cap, all the way up to Prosus, which is, you know, over 2 trillion market cap. And the benefits in terms of whether it's a small cap, a medium cap, or a large cap are all real and all apply to the companies. We actually see surprising large trade in some of our smaller companies, Fairvest, Ascendus, Fairvest, where, you know, the ascent makes a huge difference. So one of the things we bring is that because our cost structure is so much lower than the JSEs, you can start attracting a broader range of shareholders, investors into the market. Now, you'll know better than most is that, you know, historically you had the long-term investors that bought and held something for 5 or 10 years. In today's capital markets globally, you know, you're seeing a huge growth in the short term. The guys that buy and sell 100 or 1,000 times a day trying to make money out of it, liquidity providers, HFT guys, those guys are incredibly sensitive to costs. By bringing down friction costs, you start bringing in new players, right, that add new liquidity, and they start narrowing spreads. So every time you go to buy and sell, you can buy or sell at a slightly better price. And as I said, if you look at a share price that's 10 Rand, if you save a cent when you're buying it, that's 10 basis points. Now, 10 basis points in an investor's life in terms of it's more than most people pay in brokerage. Now, at the institutional level anyway, not so much at the retail level. And aggregate these big guys that come in and trade, they often pay cost plus. So they might be paying, 2 to 3 basis points. And, if you can save a basis point and then get better execution, you start attracting these guys. So we see our role as definitely small and mid caps, an important part of what we're doing. We need to broaden shareholders and investors and players. The more you have, the better. And that ups liquidity. So, yes, we see our role. We see ourselves playing a role in developing that part of the market.
So I have one more question for now, and then I'm going to hand back to Mark, because his Irish accent is, in any event, much better to listen to than mine. I have that on good authority, including from Mrs. Ghost. Thank you, Mark, for that. But anyway, the question is, as an individual, I know it's just like your age, anyone who follows me will know has hurt me quite a lot in the past few weeks. So let's assume I was more of a sucker for pain and I wanted to go and buy shares. How would I necessarily know my trade is being executed on or the JSE? What does it look like to me as a frankly investor? I just go and place an order with my broker. What happened?
Okay, so Financial Ghost, I didn't hear the whole question. You broke up, but I understood parts of it. And the question is, how do I access A2X?
Yeah, how do I know where my broker is executing, basically? What does it look like to me if I just place an order for shares in EOH?
Okay. So, look, the first thing is, A2X, again, right, it's the 80-20 rule. We have focused predominantly on the wholesale market in terms of the way we are structured. And the reason for that is there's a real complexity in our role as an exchange in terms of oversight on retail investors. So, as an exchange, we are responsible for our member brokers, and we need to have oversight to make sure they don't steal any investors, scrip or cash. Now, the wholesale investor, the broker never touches the scrip or the cash. It all happens at the bank and at the custody level, whereas a retail investor, it happens at the broker. So as a first step, we said, look, we need to get the wholesale market right, and then we need to find a way to get that oversight at the broker level to make sure that we comply with our requirements. So I will say at this point in time, it is difficult for a retail investor to ring up their broker and say, I want to buy on A2X. If you are dealing through an FSP, an example is like, Easy Equities is a good one. So Easy Equities obviously have a broker that they transact through. Now, in that structure, they are deemed to be what we refer to as a non-controlled client. And again, the broker never touches the cash or the shares. It's obviously managed at the Easy Equities level. They can absolutely access us, right? So, and they can trade on us. As a retail investor, it depends on the retail investor and what systems they use, but ideally you need to get market data that allows you to see what's happening on the JSE and what's happening on A2X. We do provide our market data free and real time. It is accessible on our website and it is accessible through most data vendors. And what I would say to the retail investor is when you go to look what you want to buy and sell, make sure you're looking at both markets and where the best price is. And you will see that 99% of the time, the best price will rest on A2X. So if you have to go buy and sell, you'll see that price is the best on A2X. So we're not fully, we're not in it's not that easy for a retail investor to access us now. It is something we're moving towards. And as I say, you can see what's happening, either go onto our website or use one of the approved data vendors.
Okay, Mark, over to you.
Okay, great. I think, Kevin, maybe we might take a step back to 2 weeks ago, and when, you know, trading was pretty much halted, but you guys could trade the counters that were listed on your side, no problem. So I just want to, I mean, I think something for retail shareholders to think about is, you know, is one of the companies I'm invested in actually listed on A2X? And you know, it's not, you know, the JSE not working was a classic case of, oh, I might want to buy and sell today, but actually right now I can't because, you know, it's only listed on the JSE and doesn't have a secondary listing. But maybe could you just talk through, you know, how A2X actually can bring down the whole cost of listing, you know, because of the kind of cheaper settlement and trading and everything on A2X. When you add all the trading together, JSE plus A2X, yeah, actually brings down the total cost of listing. And for me as a shareholder, you know, that's a benefit to me as a shareholder, and you know, something that, you know, shareholders should maybe potentially say to, you know, the IR context, hey, have you considered A2X? You know, have you looked at A2X? You know, there's actually a real cost benefit that flows to shareholders.
So good question. The first thing, I think you hit a very important point, right? So we've got 54 securities listed on A2X. And we ideally would like all the companies that are listed in the JSE listed on A2X. The first thing is there's no cost to have a secondary listing. There's no cost to remain listed on A2X, so it's totally free. There's no risk because the settlement process is exactly the same, and all settlement takes place via Strait, which is actually predominantly owned by the JSE. There's no additional regulation for companies. If they're in good standing with the JSE, they're in good standing with us. So from a company perspective, there's really no reason why they shouldn't have an additional listing. And your point around shareholders motivating this with companies is incredibly useful. Companies generally only listen to their shareholders. And yes, so we would encourage all people to say, look, I want to buy and sell a stock. It's not listed on A2X. There's no downside for you as a company to have a secondary listing. We would motivate you to do it. So from a company perspective, there's no reason they wouldn't do it. From a shareholder perspective, and you want to buy and sell, there are real positive reasons as to why you want a secondary listing. First of all, we've always said, just because a company lists and the shares are in private hands or public hands, why should you have to go back to the place where they listed, primary listing, to buy and sell those shares? You should have an option. I mean, in Europe, in the UK, in the US, you can trade across many, many different platforms to buy and sell that share. It's like going to a supermarket. You get the same product in various supermarkets. Why shouldn't it be the same in the secondary market? So you should give investors choice. Secondly is that you're right. Our cost structure is just so much lower. One of the benefits of being a young exchange is clearly we could get the latest technology, and we don't have legacy systems. So we run an exchange at the fraction of the cost using, as I say, the latest technology, latest business practices. And we can pass those efficiencies on in the form of exchange fees. So you're right. When you trade on an exchange, there are a bunch of exchange fees. The first one is that you generally have to pay for real-time market data. As I'm sure most of you will know, if you go to look at the JSE data, it's 15 minutes delayed. If you want that real-time, it costs you a couple of thousand rand a month. We provide ours free, real-time. Secondly, if you want to see any SENS announcements, so when a company produces an announcement about any corporate action or dividends or whatever, to get that real-time, you've got to pay more. It's another 3,000 or 4,000 rand a month, right? Again, A2X provides that real-time and free. So first of all, investors get that for free, real-time. Secondly, when you go to transact, the JSE charges a fee. Our fee is basically half of that fee. Once you got a transaction fee, you also then have a clearing fee. Again, ours is materially cheaper. You then have what they call a post-trade fee. The JSE uses a system called BDA, and you get charged that. We have a system we call MeCrash. You get charged for that. Again, half the price. So when you add up these stack of fees, right, A2X is half of that of the JSE. And those friction costs, reducing those friction costs, have that very positive influence on the formation of the market. So you give people choice, you give them lower costs, and then you have this wonderful benefit where bid and offer spreads start to narrow because you reduce friction costs. And there's two examples I use. One is, you know, you've got to pay a transfer fee, a stamp duty when you buy and sell a house. I mean, it starts at, I think, 7% and ramps up to about 12%. If it was 1%, people would buy and sell houses a lot more. And it's exactly the same with shares. If you take down the friction cost, people buy and sell them a lot more, and you actually get a better price formation in understanding the true value. And so, as I talked about earlier, by dragging in a whole lot of new players and distributing, broadening the amount of people that participate, you get better price formation. So we now sit in a situation where you go and buy or sell something, it's generally cheaper to buy on A2X in terms of the actual price. And when you come to sell it, you get a better price. And the example I use is you're going overseas, you've got to buy £1,000. There's only one bank. And you go to the bank, and as a retail investor, they'll say, well, it's going to be, looking at the price today, 19.50 to 20 Rand, right? So if you want to buy a pound, it's going to cost you 20 Rand. If you want to sell that pound when you get back, they'll only give you 19 Rand 50 for it. A new bank opens. They don't need the big margins, right? They're much more efficient. They might quote you, you know, 15.70 to 15.80. So every time you buy that pound, you're buying, sorry, that's, yeah, no, sorry, 1980, 1970, 1980. Every time you buy that pound, you're saving 20 cents that goes into your pocket. It's exactly the same when you buy and sell on the market. If you save 1 cent every time, those savings add up. And if we take all the trade on the JSE, excluding things like report-only trades and auctions, and we apply that principle, there's over R1 billion a year to be saved in South Africa just through your transacting at a better price. So that's the third reason. And the last one is that we talk about redundancy. So yes, if the JSE is down, you now can trade on another market. So we were up, and look, systems can, you know, anyone's systems can be impacted. You know, we do pride ourselves on having a lot of redundancy. And as a young exchange, you don't get the same slack as a you know, like the JSE. So we're not forgiven as quickly. So we obviously spend a lot of time and effort and money in making sure our systems are up and we have good redundancy. But I'm not saying we could go down, you can trade in the JSE. So, you know, those are the reasons one would consider having a secondary listing for the company and for the investors. And for the country as a whole, the reason regulators in most countries have enabled competition is competition creates the benefits of competition, efficiencies, client service, you know, grows the market. And that all reduces the cost of raising capital when companies want to raise capital, and that creates economic growth. And that's really the reason regulators have done it. I've always said, I can't think of a single service provider that really benefits the end user, right? Competition is always good for the end user.
Kevin, maybe I can ask you something there. I mean, I'm thinking back to my old sort of high school project. A group of five people, one person would have to do the hard yards and the big slog, and it was difficult. And then there would be the one clever person in the group who would do, you know, the most enjoyable part of the work and eat the other one's lunch. It feels to me like the days to do all the regulation stuff. I mean, this is the model. I just think it's fascinating, right? I mean, they take responsibility for the regulatory stuff. They make sure these companies are compliant. They listing rules, all of that happens at the JSE, but the actual thing that happens after that around trade can essentially happen with you. I mean, is that a fair summary of the model? Because I'm probably
so my response would be as follows. The first thing I would say is the primary listing business of the JSE is a profit center in its own right. They charge companies for that regulation and to list. So it's not free, right? So if we offer primary listings, we have to charge, right? Because there's a lot of regulatory responsibility, time, systems, people that you need. So that is a business for them individually from the secondary market. Secondly, in most countries, they divorce the role of primary from the secondary market, and that's specifically to create competition in the secondary market. And the third thing I'll say is the JSE is a ginormous beneficiary of the very same model that we apply. As I said, if you look at the JSE, 79 companies are inward listed, right? Six of those are in the top 10 biggest companies in South Africa. They have a primary listing overseas where the exchange is doing all the heavy lifting, and they have an inward listing on the JSE with very little requirement from their side. So whether it's a Prosus, a Richemont, an Anglos, a Billiton, a BATS, right? The JSE itself is a very big beneficiary of this very same model. So yes, there is the work to be done, but they get paid for that work. They also benefit from the separation between primary and secondary in this, by offering those shares as inward listings. And we are a beneficiary of that as well. So is it appropriate? Absolutely.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, that makes perfect sense. Thank you. Mark, over to you. Okay.
Kevin, if we zoom out a bit to the, you know, broader international space, as you say, you guys are just coming up on your 4-year anniversary. If we look at, you know, I remember when I was living in Australia, you know, Chi-X coming into the market there, you know, Aquis, as you say, has been running on a pan-European basis for a while. You know, in terms of share that these, you know, challenger exchanges or brands or players, you know, tend to start taking, you know, what, I mean, I think I saw on your Twitter feed, guys had where does it sit right now, you know, A2X is the JSE in terms of total share of kind of volumes traded, and then zoom out then to, you know, if you know the kind of international experience, you know, where those guys have got to, who are a bit further down the path.
Yeah, so you're right. I mean, Kayaks Australia have done very well. They've got, at last I saw, was over 20% of total market activity, so they've done very well. I mean, the European example is a wonderful one. I mean, the first competitor against the London Stock Exchange was Kayaks, obviously Europe. A bit of interesting information, I think. There had been 22 or 23 attempts to compete against the LSE before Kayaks got it right. that's how hard it is. But Kayaks was bought by BATS, and BATS was bought by SIBO. And actually, SIBO is now the biggest pan-European market. They have, depending on which market you look at, somewhere between 20 and 30%. So it's been an incredible success story. In terms of A2X, we have generally been running at less than 1% of total activity. You're quite right. We have seen quite a nice step change over the last month. We've pushed that up to between 1% and 2%. The reason we've had the step change is one of the big brokers come on, and we refer to it as being fully operationalized, so they can trade across markets. And you know, all of a sudden now you're a destination, and they just automatically look across markets, and they just want to trade with the best prices. So that's given us a nice step up. South Africa is unique in the sense that, as I say, the door opened for competition, but the playing field was never leveled to make it more enabling for competitors like it was internationally. And there are a couple of really key things. So the first thing is, as I mentioned, our regulation doesn't allow us to have an admit to trade model where we can just list everything that's on the JSE and make it available for trade. You can imagine one day you have three, the next day you have everything available, how that obviously would, you know, jumpstart your business model. Now, as I say, most countries, the regulators say, yep, it's fine, it's in good standing, you can trade it wherever you like. You can just do it unilaterally. In South Africa, we have to knock on the door, get in every company's face, and persuade them of the benefits of a secondary listing. As you can imagine, it's a lot of education. There's always this perception, I've only known one exchange, you know, it's going to cost me money, it's going to be extra regulation, is it really going to help? So even though it's a very simple process, you need to break down those perceptions. The second thing is that in most countries, they would have a clearinghouse or an independent clearinghouse, which a broker would then say they would appoint a clearinghouse, and you could trade across markets. All your trade would go to that clearinghouse, would get bulked up and be settled. In South Africa, there are no independent clearinghouses. We have whatever the JSE trades gets cleared through their infrastructure, whatever A2X trades, we had to create our own infrastructure, clear infrastructure, we clear, which creates a level of complexity that the other markets don't have. The other thing is that in the JSE, given talking about legacy systems, they have something called broker dealing accounting system, which is kind of the backbone of their post-trade operations. And this is actually why they went down a couple of weeks ago, because that system couldn't cope with the sudden kick up in volumes. The problem is that system, if you are a member broker of the JSE, you have to use that system. And on that system, it's a beast. I mean, it's your client records, it's your deal allocation system, it's your status reports, it's your position keeping, it's your accounts, it's your adjusted liquid capital. So they've cleverly tied brokers into their system, and the system's 35 years old. And hence why when it went down, everything just stops. Right, it is for South Africa the biggest single point of failure for capital markets. Now, in most markets, you wouldn't be mandated to use a exchange system. You could choose the system that you wanted. So if in South Africa you've got 55 brokers and they're all on different systems, you don't have that point of risk or single point of failure. And so these are some of the things we've had to fight against and to find solutions to. And I think as we've found solutions and rolled them out, we're seeing volumes pick up. And I would say, as a broker comes on, we see a step change, but we are looking to take, 20 to 30% of overall activity in South Africa. That's our goal. But it's more than that. We think it's about growing the overall market, as I say. More efficient, more innovative, more service orientated, we can grow this overall market. I hope that answered the question.
Yeah, it does. And I think, growing the overall market, I think is a classic example of that where, they have grown the overall retail stockbroking account market rather than, stealing share from the incumbents. I think it's also kind of a good example.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to, to kind of briefly touch on was the ETFs business. I know Signia, who are listed themselves with A2X, the company, have now started doing their ETF portfolios on A2X.
Yeah.
But because I look at the Australian market a lot, there's a lot of what I call plain vanilla ETFs on here, and there's some very smart beta niche interesting ETFs that you can get in the States or you can get in Australia that none of the local providers here have rolled out.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering how would, you attract if, let's say there's an EV focused ETF in the US that's run by, WisdomTree or Vanguard or one of the big providers there. How do you go attracting those international ETFs to, come and have a secondary listing here? Surely they must think, there's only going to be marginal demand for it. And, I'm just wondering how you attract those international ETFs, because I think, that's a gap that's missing these more esoteric ETFs that local providers don't provide, but an existing product is already trading on a listed exchange in a more developed market.
Yeah. Okay. So, tough question. the first thing is, you're right. We've got 18 exchange-traded products listed on A2X. Two of them actually exchange-traded notes, which are issued by Investec. We've got ABSA's three precious metal ETFs, which are, I think, pretty much the largest ETFs. And then we've got the full Signia range, which is wonderful. And we are obviously knocking on the doors of Satrix and One Invest and CoreShares as well. So hopefully, you know, we can motivate them to also get their ETF secondary listed. Why don't we have the sexy stuff in South Africa yet? I think it's more a regulatory issue in terms of exchanges responding quickly enough to allow these types of products. Again, if they were listed here or listed in an approved exchange offshore, we can inward list them. But I think, as I said, it's more of a regulatory issue, and I think we've been slow to respond. And I think that's part of our challenge in South Africa, is that I think we're not progressing, responding, and developing as fast as we're seeing elsewhere. And we need to, if we want to start, you know, getting new listings, attracting more products, etc. So we're not in that space yet, but we see the opportunity in that space to enable primary listings of more sexy type ETFs. As I said, the first step, we're looking to amend our license to allow the inward listing of them, and we do engage with many market participants. So there are some local players looking to do more sexy stuff with a international listing, primary listing, and an inward listing in South Africa. So we are trying, we are working on those type of opportunities, but I do caution it takes time. It's not an overnight thing. But I mean, the ETF industry is the global, you know, the global growth has been wonderful, and we need to make sure we're doing the same in South Africa.
Mark, I have literally one more question to ask, and then I'm done. I don't know if you've got any more, but we should probably let people ask some questions as well. My question, Kevin, is that, you know, we've seen a lot of press in the last couple of weeks, so bad news at Zarex.
Yes.
Sorry, Murphy's Law, someone tried to phone me. We've seen bad press at Zarex. We've seen 4AX rebrand into the Cape Town Stock Exchange. Now, I just want to confirm, as the primary and secondary market is kind of separated, which is your model, there's no reason why a company that is listed on what will be the Cape Town Stock Exchange can't list on A2X as well, right? I mean, it's, you would see them in the same light as the JSE.
Yes. And very good question. Yes, as you say, very sad, the news about Zarex. I don't think it's great for, you know, any alternative exchange. But I think, fortunately, the communication from the regulator has been clear that, you know, it's a reg capital issue and liquidity issue, and the other alternative exchanges are fully compliant. And just from an A2X perspective, you know, these things always rattle people. But from an A2X perspective, you know, we've always complied with our reg capital and liquidity requirements, never breached them since the day we opened. And, you know, that's why you need proper shareholders with deep pockets, and people like African Rainbow Capital are strategic enough. So just to kind of calm those fears down. So one of the challenges, you're right. So you've got, so first of all, we had to amend our license to say just not the JSE, but to allow secondary listings from the other alternative exchanges, which we have done. So from a regulatory perspective, we can secondary list a company that has a listing on Cape Town Exchange or 4AX. The biggest challenge was the 4AX and Zarex model was very different in the sense that we refer to them as closed exchanges. So if you have a listing on one of those two exchanges, any investor needs to sit in a certain custodian, a ring-fenced custodian, so they can pre-check whether you have the money or the shares before you trade. So they have a pre-authorized model, and they had real-time models. So effectively, if you think of it's a bilateral, one guy, one person selling and one person buying, you pre-check, he's got the money, they've got the shares, trade matches. I mean, it's real time, it's settled, right? Now, the mainstream market doesn't work like that. The mainstream market works in a way where you manage your brokers. Your brokers trade for their clients. There's no pre-authorization. You just manage the risk between the trade and the settlement. And you do that through various ways, including margining the broker to make sure you have a margin in terms of if they default on that trade, and a whole lot of process I won't get into detail. So the biggest challenge with that is that they are pre-authorized real-time settlement, and we are T plus three. So it was never easy to trade across different settlement cycles. Having said that, all these things are possible. And in fact, we were at a very advanced stage with Zarex to put that in place. And we are actually been working with 4AX for some time. And we actually can announce, I mean, it's in the news, that the very first listing will take place. A company called TWK, they were listed in Zarex. They are moving their listing to 4AX, and they will then secondary list on A2X. And I think that is an incredible good news story, because here's an example of two alternative exchanges working together where they complement each other. So 4AX is good with primary listings and retail market. A2X is good in the wholesale market and secondary trading. And by working together, we're able to provide a company like TWK with a full service, a primary listing, access to the wholesale market, and access to the retail market. And I think that's incredibly exciting. And let's get the first one over the line. But I do believe that once that's done, I think it'll open up quite a nice opportunity for many more companies to go that route. So exciting times. I think we need to watch it for the next couple of months. Between now and year end, I think we could see some excitement in that space.
Yeah, I mean, the talk of what I've read on the 4AX rebranding to the Cape Town Stock Exchange, you know, they're really targeting that kind of small cap growth companies, you know, they're kind of 100 million to 2 billion. You know, maybe it's a bit like a mini AIM or a, you know, where, you know, real kind of more venture stage or early stage companies can come to a public environment, raise capital, you know, boost their profile and have, you know, have that script capital to, you know, do acquisitions or whatever. But I think to Ghost's point on, you know, the constant delistings we're seeing, if they can do it in a cost competitive manner, you know, I think there'd be a lot of appetite in the private space to get into the public space where they actually feel like they're getting a reasonable valuation for the effort and the additional compliance that comes with it, rather than, you know, the venture guys selling out to the bigger PE guys and skipping the public option completely.
Yeah.
Kevin, we've been on for, I think, nearly 50 minutes. So I think we'll leave it there. Thank you very much. A very insightful conversation. And I think, yeah, if anybody wants to know more about A2X, I think jump on your website or follow your Twitter feed. It's actually interesting to me. I often look at it, you know, what are the, I think you guys, is it the top five you do? You say how much of the total volume in that stock has happened in a day. And it's interesting to see, you know, sometimes how much of the volume in a particular stock has gone through A2X as opposed to, you know, JSE.
No, well, thank you very much for inviting me to the show and also the questions and opportunity.
Okay, great.
Thank you, Kevin.
Guys, we're going to leave it there. Thanks to everyone who joined in. We had, I'm not sure how many people we had on here, but it looks like we had a good few. And yeah, we'll hopefully do another one of these sometime in the near future.
Look forward to it. And again, thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks, everyone. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday.
Cheers, everyone. Bye.